This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and I recently decided to give Sterling Soap Company's Ground Breakfast Blend coffee a try. While brewing, the aroma was inviting, and the taste? Lightly sweet and delicious, as the texture of this amazing coffee was sweet and smooth, as I experienced a coffee with a velvety texture, almost creamy. Sterling's breakfast blend is light but in no way weak, with a high quality taste and smell. My wife and I are now hooked on Sterling Soap coffee, and you should be too. Check out their coffees and other products at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This is our league, and this is your league. Broadcasting from the 55-yard line in Japan to the shores of the Great White North and everywhere around the world on Gridiron America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Everybody, welcome back to Gridiron America. It is Dave Selinsky, Mike Tackett, and myself, Greg St. James, finally back at the microphone after a couple weeks off here with, you know, life and that. You know, we were hoping to have a weekly show, but sometimes that's not always possible. And this will actually be our last episode until, well, at least for about 3 weeks, until after I get back from my big international trip I got coming up. So going to try to cram as much football into this show as we can. So, guys, good to see you. What's up?
How are things? Always a pleasure to be back.
Yes, agree.
And, all right, so last time we talked, we were talking, I think, about week four, memory serves me, week four or five with the UFL, just wrapping up week seven. Mike, lead us off. Where are we at? Let's talk about the UFL in general before we get into standings. Where are we at with the UFL? How are things looking with the league compared to past seasons?
Yeah, it's funny. So I don't have the graphic in front of me, but I know that a lot of the legacy teams are not as hot as they should be, and then some are making their way back up the ladder. The new franchises, they started hot, and they're starting to fall off. So it's definitely interesting to see how this year is going. Like we talked off air, you know, Birmingham is starting to make their way back into the playoff picture. St. Louis, if memory serves me right, they're undefeated at home. So those are your legacy teams that are there. Obviously, BC is a juggernaut, but then you have Orlando that's still in the mix. Louisville, Columbus, they're still fighting nail and claw. So it's definitely an interesting season when you look at the legacy teams and then the new teams.
Okay. And I know I'm looking at a graphic here from the X-Fan show that those guys put out when talking about the league. So when it comes to, you know, kind of the big metrics, TV ratings, definite improvement over past years.
Yeah, so it's kind of twofold. So on one hand, you're seeing a smaller attendance. I remember, I'm not sure if you guys do, but just it seems like a few years ago during the XFL, the Vegas Vipers, a lot of people were given a hard time because they were only drawing 6,500 at their games at the old baseball field. And now you look at the lower tier UFL teams, I think they would dream to have 6,500. So that's one side of the coin is the lower attendance. But on the other side of the coin, where the grass is greener, attendance is at an all-time high for the UFL. Social media engagement from last year, if I remember seeing that correctly, it's up 98%, and I think that that's reflective as to more viewers tuning in.
And Dave, your thoughts?
Agree 100% with Mike. TV, the TV ratings are certainly, they're showing improvement over past seasons, which will definitely bring more people involved socially to comment on it, to engage with it. And having an owner in Mike Rapoli who's out in the front, who is trying to promote it, who is trying to drag people along with him to watch the games, go to the games, it's great to see, especially from past years on how the league was promoted and how the media that is partnered with the UFL would even present it. So it's been great to see. I mean, the ABC broadcast, the Fox broadcast, the ESPN, they all add something different to it. And it's great to see that people are responding. I think it was the Dallas game this past week drew over a million people for the first time. So it's great to see, especially when we're getting week 6-7, when we're starting to talk about people are doing other things. Like we're getting long into the season, and for the most part, the ratings are trending upwards overall, which is great, great, great to see.
And, you know, compared to past seasons, what do you guys think has been, why is it better this year than in years past? I mean, that's kind of a multifaceted probably explanation, but what are some of the reasons you guys think?
I think that it's a few things. I think we're starting to see storylines, you know, a great example, you know, Dave, you mentioned just a little bit ago, the Luis Perez saga. So, you know, folks want to tune in to see these storylines develop and, you know, what's going on with A.J. McCarron, who was so great as a quarterback for St. Louis, and what can he do as a coach now for Birmingham? So from a storyline perspective, I think fans are interested in that. And then just, I think, new teams. You know, we're seeing teams and markets that we've never had teams in markets at before, or at a minimum, it's been a very long time. So, you know, Columbus, Louisville, those are, you know, definitely your new guys in town. But, you know, you look at a town like Orlando, who's had their fair share of spring league football teams going all the way back to the World League of American Football. So,
oh, going even farther, going even farther. The Orlando,
I don't want to show my age. So, yeah. So I think for just those two things, that's, you know, it's drawing more of an interest. And I also think that subsequently, Mike Rapoli has really, he's got to start from the ground up again. I think that Dwayne and Danny and even Jared Cardinal, I think what they were doing was just enough to keep the company alive, but it was not enough to make the company, the league grow. So I think that Mike Rapoli is definitely invested in doing just that. I mean, you see him on the sidelines talking with the media, with the coaches. He'll even try to tell the coaches what play to call. So, you know, that's the first time I think we've seen stuff like that. So I think a lot of fans are excited to see that type of interest in ownership.
And when it comes to like excitement, obviously Louisville. So let's talk about the markets real quickly. So St. Louis, has there been a drop off? And I ask this because I'm over on the other side of the world. I'm not able to watch the UFL regularly like you guys are, even though I do have access through ESPN for some of the games. But in general, the legacy markets with St. Louis and Washington, how are they doing compared to, say, the newer teams and obviously the mid-tier teams like your Dallas, your Houston, where we know they've had issues? How are the teams doing comparatively, I guess, is my question.
I think it's for the new teams, the honeymoon phase is still going on, because if you look at the legacy teams, the St. Louis, the DC, for example, even Birmingham, I mean, those stadiums just a year or two ago when you do a side-by-side versus now. There's not many as many there's not as many fans in the stadium, but the viewership is up. So I think a lot of folks, really, especially in the new markets, this is all new to them. And you know, maybe it's just the city of Louisville, they're thriving for a professional football league. Columbus is tough because really you're competing, even in the off season, you're competing with Ohio State. So again, with it being new, I think it's fans are interested, but long-term sustainability, will it maintain that or grow, or will it kind of do what the legacy teams have done where it just kind of tapers off a little bit? I think that's a good question, and I think only time will tell for that.
When it comes, like St. Louis, I mean, St. Louis has always been, at least on the attendance side of the house, the gold standard of the league. Is St. Louis experiencing any real, I mean, has there been a drop off with enthusiasm and attendance in St. Louis, or what do you think?
Yeah, so from the numbers that I've seen and the people that live in the St. Louis area, numbers are down a little bit. For example, I want to say last year they were averaging 36,000-37,000. Now it's 30,000-31,000. So it's lower. I think the worst game they had was at 29,000. Again, don't quote me on that, but
right. Well, I know in looking at, you know, looking at some of the data that you shared with me before we went on, before we started recording. So you got St. Louis doing about 74% capacity in the dome. And next up you had Columbus, which shocks me. They're 93% of capacity. What gives there? Because I remember, and again, looking back at a historical perspective, Dave, remind me here, when we were young college guys, younger, watching the World League of American Football, how well did the Ohio Glory do in terms of attendance? I mean, to see the Columbus having 93% capacity at the stadium, I mean, every preconceived notion I had as to whether or not the UFL would work in Columbus just went right out the window. What do you think?
I don't think the Ohio Glory had anybody. They only lasted the one season, right?
Yeah, but I don't remember what their attendance was like or what the fan support was. I don't recall off the top of my head. I just knew they weren't a very good team. That's all I remember.
I remember they played at where Ohio State played.
They played at Ohio Stadium. So that's
like 90,000 people at that.
Yeah.
Team. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they announced 37,000 at the first game. They announced 31,000. They announced 41,000 at a May game.
Oh, really?
And at the end of the season, they announced 23,000 for their last game against the Birmingham Fire. But honestly, I don't remember seeing any pictures.
Yeah. I mean,
and I don't remember any of those games ever being like, that wasn't the ABC game of the week.
Right. And, you know, to be fair to comparing attendance numbers from the 20th century to now is kind of unfair because, as you guys know, we're kind of, in terms of people's attention spans with sport, I mean, there's so many different options now that people have. So, but yeah, I'm going to look that up. That was just one of those questions that as I'm looking at the data that, you know, we have about where we're at with the UFL and the attendance. And then I'm just thinking back, how does that compare to the World League of American Football? But again, I think it'd probably be comparing apples to oranges.
Yeah, it's so tough, to be honest. And even though the World League of American Football was heavily promoted, heavily invested by the NFL.
Yeah, for the first.
If I remember correctly, they pretty much used their current TV deals to get their games on basically where the NFL games were.
Right.
So I think you saw a lot of that, but I mean, it's hard. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's okay. So, but going back to what I was saying, so we got wins with attendance, and I mean, St. Louis, still the gold standard. Columbus is doing well attendance wise. Louisville doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised. I just got done watching a documentary about the old ABA. And in one episode, they focused on, at least part of the episode, focused on the Kentucky Colonels. And Louisville has always been one of those major, you forget it's a major city till somebody brings it up. And it's like, yeah, how come there's no pro sports team, major league sports team? So seeing Louisville do well with attendance, because, I mean, it's kind of been shunned in terms of major league sports, doesn't surprise me. The issue, obviously, with the league are like five other teams. So Birmingham, they're at 51% capacity. The DC Defenders, I thought they would be doing better on attendance, but 61% of capacity. Orlando, they're 58, so about 60%. Dallas and Houston bringing up the rear in terms of attendance. And I'm surprised. Texas is struggling, but at the same time, knowing my history with the league, but alternative football leagues, even going back to the American Football League, that doesn't surprise me either. So, what do you guys? What's your take on that? On the numbers?
It's different time than, you know, it was the pre .com boom, you know, everything is streaming now, and you can sit at the comfort of your home, or you can be out and about at dinner and watch a game on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't always like that, especially, you know, we talk about the USFL, I think, is a great example. You know, we talked about that off air, you know, unless you had ABC or whatever game whatever channel the game was televised on, you had to go watch them in person, you know. And it was the Tampa Bay Bandits, you know, that was a fun time. So Bandit ball. So access is at an all-time accessibility and access is at an all-time high. So it definitely changes, I guess, from a numbers perspective.
Yeah.
It's different. I think with the statistics that you were reading off, I think it's important to keep in mind those are the percentage of seats that were sold, not necessarily the reflective of the people that were in the stadium, because you hear like, oh, 60%, but there's, you know, it looks like there's 25%. So it sounds like tickets are being sold, you know, and I'm not sure if, you know, people just have prior obligations or other things going on to where they're just missing these games. So if there's any silver lining in that, say the tickets are being sold, but from an optic standpoint, I think it would definitely be better if we could see more more people in those seats.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave, thoughts?
I'm curious as to when the current TV deals are up, because this was always brought up as a I know both these leagues came up, they're about streaming, they're about eyeballs, right? Not so much about attendance. And yes, attendance, look, if you have 3,500 people at the game, that's a negative that's very hard to overcome in conversations. But if they're getting a million people a game watching it on ABC, that's going to garner them more money from the networks, and that's going to give them more options. As with sports streaming is huge. Yeah. Everybody needs that content. And if you can provide a quality content that's inexpensive to you, that you can show in a nice window of time, sell off your advertising, that's just going to bode well moving forward for the UFL. And I think that's a big positive, that yes, they need to do more for ticket sales, but I think that is an easier anything to address during an off season, then how are you going to raise your streaming rates or your media rates by 10%? So,
okay.
But that's just myself.
Okay. And then finishing up here with our UFL talk here, let's talk about where we're at standings wise. So right now, DC Defenders are in first place with St. Louis and Orlando battling for second. And in fourth place and battling in contention for the final playoff spot is the Dallas Renegades. Because we're going into the seventh week, and by the time we all get together again, we'll be in playoffs. What do you guys think right now about where we're at with the playoff race? Is Dallas going to be able to hold on to that final spot, or do you see a change? You see some of the lower tier teams. I mean, you got four teams. The bottom four teams of the league, all at 2-4, Birmingham, Louisville, Columbus, and Houston. Do you see any of those bottom four challenging for any playoff spots?
Birmingham. I think they got their guy at quarterback. And he's the former DTR, and he's a former Orlando quarterback. And, you know, when they went to Orlando this past weekend, he showed, you know, what they missed out on. And again, I think you have a very experienced coach who knows what it's like to compete at the playoffs, the postseason, and getting your way to that point. Somebody, there has to be a fourth team, you know. And again, when you look at it, like we talked about earlier, Dallas is tanking at the worst time. Columbus is very inconsistent. Especially at the quarterback position. Louisville, again, they don't have a quarterback, it seems like, and Houston is just very inconsistent as well. So I think of the bunch, I think Birmingham's on the right trail to come out as the number four seed for the playoffs.
Okay. Dave, thoughts?
I mean, Birmingham, they control their destiny. They play Dallas this week. So,
okay.
If they're at home, Dallas, if they can win this one, they're basically tied in standings, but have a leg up. And it's going to be Columbus plays St. Louis. That's going to be a tough one. I mean, really, I would say it's Birmingham and Dallas fighting for that fourth one, that fourth seat. And unless Dallas figures it out quick.
Okay.
They're going to slide a ways away.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to watching the final 3 weeks of the season while I'm back in the States. So, you know, it'll be nice being able to text in real time with you guys watching the games on TV. All right. So let's shift gears from the 50-yard line to the 55-yard line. And let's talk about playoffs, because the CFL commissioner has announced that they're expanding the playoffs to basically include every team but one with CFL postseason. And social media has been entertaining just watching the uproar. The old guys like Dave and I talk, you know, nobody likes the new commissioner because of all the changes he's made without any input from the fans. So let's talk about it, because I figured, we've talked quite a bit. First half UFL, let's talk CFL. Let's wrap it up and, you know, talk another 20 minutes here about 20 minutes or so. Dave, I'm going to let you start off, man, because you live closest to Canada amongst us all. What were your thoughts when this came out?
There are 9 people,
yeah,
who are thrilled with the new commissioner.
Yes.
I mean, looking at it, going through all the changes that they've made, the earlier about the field of play and the game itself going to the playoffs, I do have to say the playoff change has, I've warmed up to it in the idea of it's going to be able to generate more money and allow the players to make a few more paychecks, that I think this was an answer to the UFL and the NFL. And it's also, we're coming up to a new media rights deal.
Yeah, TV contracts coming up
in Canada. And they have I think they have a real opportunity to really cash in, but they needed to provide more meaningful games. And meaningful games being October, November, where things matter. Maybe not so much more in June, July, when it's games 8, 9 of 18. So that point, I like it. And the commissioner, the owners did speak with the players about the playoffs. So it wasn't one of those things where
he just did. This wasn't just a fiat, you know, a ruling from above without any input.
Correct. They actually went to the players, the Canadian Football Players Association. They talked to them. They understood. Some of these guys, honestly, it's an interesting fact that the extra two playoff games or three playoff games they can make an extra $30,000, which is almost half of what the minimum is to play for a season. So there's some serious cash. Now, granted, you're looking at now playing 23, 24 games, depending on how this all goes, plus preseason games. But it's a little different style of game, I understand. But still, there's an opportunity, I think, over time, once you get past the 8 of 9 teams make the playoffs scenario, hopefully they get a 10th team sooner than later with everything going on. But just like there are changes to the field and to the changes to the game, I'm interested enough to see how they play out, because at least there may be a lot of people who are pure CFL fans who are upset with this change. At least there was, the league has walked through and said why they're doing these things. It's not just ta-da. And granted, they might not have said the playoffs is about generating more money, but it is, because it has to be. Like the last 15 years of the CFL is talking about how too many teams are losing money.
Yeah.
Well, you just can't make money just snapping your fingers. So we'll see. Like I said, I'm interested to see how this all plays out, especially the next 2 years are going to be really something, because you have your last year, the 55-yard line, you have the next year with other changes. So I'm in the camp of I'm here for it. Let's see how it plays out.
Yeah. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah. Dave, I just got a question for you. What's your opinion on, I believe it's Halifax, but don't quote me, the CFL potentially getting a 10th team? Do you think that adds more parity, or is that more of a watered-down effect that's going to hurt the league long-term?
I think it will create more parity. I think there's enough talent in Canada, and bringing in Americans to fill the different numbers that they have, that I think you won't. I don't think you're going to see a watered down effect. I mean, obviously the expansion team's going to struggle. Depending on how they go through and do an expansion draft and all that stuff. But I think having that 10th team is going to really help out with scheduling, help out with so many different issues that the league has to deal with teams playing 4 days later, 7 days later, just the way it has to go with some weeks there's three teams by week. It just, having that 10th team is just going to, whether it's Halifax, whether it's Quebec, whether it's another team in the suburbs of Toronto, north of Toronto, or wherever they end up figuring out where to put it. I just think it needs to be a Canadian city. And with the new field, it just seems like there, I think that really speaks a lot of the opportunity for Halifax to do that. Or I think second would be Quebec City for me. Toronto's an option, but I just don't, yes, it's a humongous city. It wouldn't, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment is not going to own that team too. So it's like, who's going to, what billionaire is going to want to compete with Maple Leaf Sports? Like, I just don't.
Yeah.
I think it's just an easy cop out to say, we'll throw another team in Toronto. But I think they're setting up a revenue system where they can attract and get that 10th person. I think my gut tells me they're close with number 10, but there's still a couple questions on how can I get this close to break even or make something. So, hey, yeah, we're at a couple more games. We're going to shrink the field. Like, it just seems like there's a method to the madness that obviously they're not telling us about.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And now that we're talking about it, the more I'm thinking, you know, by adding a 10th team, then you get rid of by adding a 10th team, now you're back in the position that CFL was prior to the expansion of the playoffs. You know, instead of three teams missing the playoffs, it's only two teams missing the playoffs. I mean, you're kind of back to where you were before the playoffs expanded anyway. Now going to talking about when is this 10th team going to come about? Yeah, I would not be surprised to see within the year them make the announcement that a 10th team is coming for sure. Just the way the things have been progressing with all of the other changes, you know, caught everybody off guard, moving the goal line back, getting rid of the Rouge, the 50-yard line, but not, you know, keeping the field the same width, just the way it's all playing out. And I think the CFL is finally doing the things all of us fans who've watched it for a long time have really, really wanted. Though I think most of us would agree we would rather have a 110-yard field versus a 100-yard field. But by moving back the goalpost to the end, okay, all right, well, maybe I guess I can live with it. But I know the hard, at least especially the ones on social media, the old school, hardcore, probably 50-plus and older fans, not too happy with the changes. But if the CFL is going to exist in the next 10 to 20 years, you know, it's not about the older fans anymore. It's about attracting newer fans. That's my thought.
Yes, and unfortunately, there was I don't know if you guys saw, there was a monkey wrench that was thrown into that whole thing this afternoon.
No, I was when it happened, I was asleep. Fill me in.
It was announced today that ACC college football will be coming to BMO Field next year.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Syracuse is going to play Wake Forest at BMO.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, social media blew up going, four downs in 2028 for the CFL. Like,
oh, geez. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I don't either. But the thing is, Syracuse is so close.
Yeah.
Syracuse draws. Syracuse, when they're in the Pinstripe Bowl, they do great there. I mean, it's so close.
And it's not like Michigan and Ohio State are playing there. It's two mid-level college teams.
So it's going to be either August 28th or 29th. It'll be on ABC or ESPN. It's funny how this is. I think this is going to be fine. I think it's going to be a good crowd. It's going to be good exposure. Yeah. And Syracuse travels well. And you can get from Wake Forest, you can get, I mean, Charlotte to being, obviously Charlotte is a little, is not sure. Right there for Wake Forest.
Toronto
is an easy flight. Like I can see this as a win-win for a lot of people. And even, I mean, Syracuse, Toronto's a couple hours from me. So let's add another hour. It's 3 hours. I mean, it's not. And who wouldn't want to go to Toronto for a 3-day weekend at the end of August to watch a college game and hang out in Toronto? Like, I just don't, I don't see the bad part about it, but it's funny how all of a sudden the Canadian football fans were like, this is now it's four downs. This is what's going to make it now.
Listen, if the Argos, shout out to Mark Perry at UFL News Hub, but had his conspiracy theory of the Argos moving to the XFL actually happen, then I would be worried about four down football. But a college game at BMO Field just hopefully they're going to get the field right. Because if you remember the last time four down football came to Canada in Winnipeg, the Raiders, I think it was the Raiders and the Packers, they screwed up. They couldn't get the field right. There were issues with the field, reducing the field, that caused a safety hazard. So hopefully, if they're going to do it right, which I assume they will, because it's major. It's MLSE.
Yeah, and I think they'll be fine. I think this might be part of that. The Buffalo Bills marketing. They went to a multi-year. The Argos the Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment did a multi-year marketing deal with the Buffalo Bills. So this could be part of that as well.
Yeah. So, okay. So as we wrap things up here, anything on the CFL side of the house that, because next time we all get together, we're going to be right before the CFL season starts. So anything to think about between now and the start of preseason at the end of May?
Rookie camp is underway. Monday, I think the veterans come back in Monday or Tuesday of next week. And by the end of the month, we'll have preseason games. So
cool.
A lot of players are still getting signed. A lot of draft picks are getting signed. So it's a fun time. A lot shaking with the CFL right now.
I'm looking forward to this season because this is going to be the first time, at least with this podcast, that we get to sit down and talk really on a weekly basis, talk CFL football. Because in years past, we're just mainly focused, Scott and I just focused on, interviewing authors and people. But now, as we move forward with the podcast, obviously we've covered the UFL. It's been, that's kind of our warm-up to the CFL. So next year we'll be covering probably do a lot more weekly UFL stuff. But as we approach CFL season, obviously the podcast before it was Gridiron America was called From the 55, has its roots in Canadian football. So we'll be covering that, the UFL, simultaneously. When is the UFL championship, Mike? Is that?
It is June 13th at 3:00, and that'll be at the DC Defenders Field in Washington.
Okay. And you're going to the game. So it'll be, we will plan on doing a podcast, obviously before the game, when you're at, probably the night, hopefully maybe the night before you head to the game the next day. And,
definitely looking forward to it.
So yeah, no, we're going to have, when we come back next show, we'll be talking UFL playoffs, talking the start of CFL regular season, and then, start little by little talking about the NFL regular season coming up. So, okay. With all that, hey, for everybody who is listening, if you haven't already, please take a look at our website, gridironamerica.net. I'm busy on my end, adding stuff to it. It is, and to be fair and open, it's a blogger site, and I like blogs and they're easy. And I'm, here every day, probably adding stuff here and there to the website for everybody's enjoyment. And all our social media links are on there. And Grey Cup tickets go on sale Monday. Oh, okay. Thanks. Mike gave me a heads up here in our private message here that the Grey Cup tickets go on sale. I just saw that pop up in our group chat. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. All right. I wish I were going. And where is the Grey Cup this year, too? I forget off the top of my head.
It's in Calgary.
Okay. Okay. All right. So getting back to what I was saying about the website, social media, you can find all our social media links at gridironamerica.net. And also, too, I am also slowly working on our What If podcast, which is going to be our companion podcast to this show, where we sit down with Mike, Dave, and also other people from the Sports History Network who are all on board with the What If project to figure out what, you know, I've run a couple sims. What if Earl Campbell played for the Cowboys in 78? And what if Dan Marino played for, got drafted by Pittsburgh? I'm working on another one right now. What if the St. Louis Cardinals signed, of all people, and Mike may not even know this name, but I know Dave does, King Corcoran, who played, he was the ultimate journeyman in minor league football, who I only had statistics for his final year of pro ball, and that was in 74 when he played for the Philadelphia Bell. And I wanted, and I'm in the process of wanting to see how the Cardinals would have done with him at quarterback in 74 versus Jim Hart. Now, why the Cardinals? Well, they're my favorite team. And 74 was the first year that the Cardinals were in the postseason since 1947. Yeah, I'm just doing a lot of testing and seeing what the numbers say, and also asking, incorporating AI into it too, to get AI's input, because when I was working on the sim, I asked ChatGPT the question, how good were the Cardinals in 1974? Because I really didn't know. And as I'm getting ready to do, it's the last question I asked ChatGPT before I hit the sack. I'm like, I did not know that. So yeah, running these sims and then coupling with AI gives me like new insight on these teams and historical periods that I didn't really have before. So it's been fun testing out and just playing with stuff. So with the Sports History Network, we're calling it the What If, the Alternative Sports History Show. But yeah, everybody at Sports History Network that I've talked to is on board with that. And we're going to be all set on it come this summer. So with all that said, on behalf of Mike, Dave, and myself, thanks for tuning in. And we will be talking to you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.